welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is my partner in crime, Megan Hoffmeyer.
Hello.
This topic this week is actually pretty perfect to have just you and I on, because we're covering Ben Wheatley's movies.
Why is that?
Well, because Ben Wheatley. And who does he work with?
I don't know. Tell us.
His wife, Amy Jump. She's his co-writer. She's co-written every single film that he's worked on and edited. Some say she's the brains behind the man.
I can get behind that.
Yeah. I mean, she's great.
Yeah, there were definitely a few articles out there that discussed how she should be a little bit more in the forefront as far as recognition in the writing process.
Yeah, I mean, just when they were talking about, she came up with all the South African dialogue for Chateau Copley in the movie we're talking about, Free Fire. But before we get too far on Free Fire, we just have a quick listener question from our good friend Dave, who has sent us many questions. And this one revolves around the Aquaman poster, which just came out. What did you think about the Aquaman poster?
You know, I really couldn't understand all the Finding Nemo references at first. I thought it was pretty bland poster, but inoffensive. And then I Googled Finding Nemo poster, and I definitely got it.
Yeah, I mean, I just liked all the sharks. I didn't even think about making fun of it.
I did see this one funny tweet. I sent you the Business Insider, where they went through some of the nicer tweets that weren't just scathing about the posters. So definitely Google that if you've got a chance. But there was a shark researcher, and his main complaint is, why are there one or two turtles in this poster with all these sharks in it, this random herbivore, and what were they eating?
Well, Dave actually asked that question that we're going to be getting to, and I just thought about Godzilla. What's the name of the Gamera? I think Gamera's this giant turtle that Godzilla fights all the time. So, I mean, they hit you with the shell.
Yeah, I didn't see anything wrong with the turtles. When you looked a little bit closer, there were some other critters in there. Overall, I didn't have a huge problem with the poster. I liked, what's his name?
Jason
Conan.
Momoa.
Yeah. I liked that he had a cheeky smile on his face. He looked like he's having fun with it. I think we're going in a new direction for DC with this director. So here's hoping it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't want to be too down on it right away, but yeah, if you Google Finding Nemo posters, you can definitely see the comparisons there.
But if you're in a jet stream and a turtle hits you in the head, you're
that
out.
That would hurt.
You're done. I want a turtle with me. Maybe they're the medics.
I mean, in Finding Nemo, the turtles were awesome. They were hang ten. They were gliding through the stream.
They were relaxed.
They were very chill.
I want to. All right. So the first question here is, he asks, where's Nemo? But the point is to find Nemo.
I think the sharks ate him on this poster.
What if Nemo is Captain Nemo, and Aquaman has to find Captain Nemo to battle Patrick Wilson, who is the bad guy in Aquaman.
So who's going to play Nemo in this one?
Vera Farmiga.
That's some hefty acting chops for the Nemo role, but well, I like it.
James Wan loves her.
True, yeah, she's in a lot of stuff, all the Conjuring, some of the horror flicks.
Or Tyrese. James Wan directed him in Furious 7. I love Tyrese. Put Tyrese in that movie.
He's an awesome Nemo.
He wanted to be...
He'd always be hungry.
He wanted to be in the Green Lantern. This is his chance. He could be Nemo in Aquaman, fighting Patrick Wilson. What do you think?
I think it would make for a pretty interesting adventure.
All right, next question. Where did he get the leather pants from? And I said a manatee, because they're sea cows.
Aw, that's horrible.
I mean, same as cows.
That's so sad. Maybe it's a shark skin. Maybe that's why all the sharks are after him.
So you think the sharks are chasing him?
Maybe.
But he's not moving.
Well, it's a little bit less depressing than a sea cow, because they're just so gentle.
Well, I just went there with that, because it's a cow, sea cow. What if it's a sea sow from The Last Jedi, the one that Luke milked?
Oof.
And Aquaman's just working all four of those udders.
And I think that the water behind him would be much cloudier and greener.
Yeah, you're right. I wonder if it shoots the milk out like an octopus.
The more I think about this, I'm liking the shark skin pant thing because it makes him sound tough. Shark skin, you can't really touch it the wrong way.
See, sharks get a bad rap, though. I don't like it.
They I'm
get...
just saying he'd look tough.
Yeah, I guess. Like, what are those pants? Manatee. Oh, great.
Maybe he's got some shark teeth embedded in there. Maybe there's a fin on the back.
If it was a bull shark pants, I'm all in.
It increases his gliding through the water.
Yeah, and if people rub him the wrong way, they'll get cut.
Literally.
They will.
If you rub him the wrong way.
No, yeah, I guess. And he doesn't have a trident anymore. What do you call a trident with five ends?
Pendant?
Yeah, all right, yeah, that might work. All right, the next one is, why is home calling? Because on the poster it says home is calling. Why are they calling him? And why isn't he answering?
Is this the throwback, serious question, is this a throwback to the Justice League movie when all of the different kingdoms were being attacked and maybe he's being called home to save them?
I think this is this after or before Justice League?
I honestly haven't looked that hard into it.
Their security was not good in Justice League.
No, not, I don't even know where to go on Justice League.
All right, and then they already asked, why are there turtles?
I think we covered the turtles angle. You need a little bit of ocean, mixed ocean flair.
Who made this poster? You do digital design. You do graphics. Would you make this poster?
Probably someone who has never read the comic books and didn't do any background research, and they were just tasked with it. You see that a lot with people who don't have little information and mediocre creativity. They just come up with the first reaction.
And it's just a ton of sharks and stuff hanging out with them.
Yeah, well, the internet did a solid to remind us all that if we're complaining about this poster, there's always the Spider-Man Homecoming poster.
That's a weird thing. I don't like this poster because this... Wait, why isn't Jason Statham in this poster?
That's a great question. I mean, he could punch some sharks.
Yeah. Wait, why is he punching sharks?
He's punching everybody.
He's punching sharks in the background of the Aquaman poster?
Yeah, he's got this underwater car, and then he does some, you know, the... oil slicks in the ocean. He's sliding through oil and fighting people.
He's also
fighting sharks.
He's also covered in oil and transporter.
Exactly.
So you're saying he's like the Exxon guys, just putting oil all over the ocean?
No, he's utilizing it in his fights for the advantage.
So he waits for oil spills, then he goes into the water and he fights sharks.
I think it's a solid one-up on any of his competition.
Yeah, I mean, Arnold's never fought sharks while covered in oil.
I mean, the baddies would not see it coming.
Well, sharks wouldn't, because there's oil everywhere.
The sharks or the actual bad guys.
Yeah. No one, you never expect Jason Statham to attack you while you're in the water.
I mean, he could be anywhere, honestly. Have you seen all his movies?
I have.
In the air, he's in trains, he's in planes, he's in the water.
He's been in everything. He's been in cardigans.
Has he been in a volcano? He's been on the home front.
Yeah. Where he fought James Franco.
And saved a kitten.
Gator Bodine. Can you believe his enemy in home front was James Franco?
I mean, James Franco has done some pretty silly, villainous characters.
If someone asked me, hey, Mark, do you want to play a guy named Gator Bodine and battle Jason Statham in Homefront, written by Sylvester Stallone from a script he wrote in the 90s, I'd be like, hell yeah.
I think the key to that one was, hey, where are we filming? New Orleans? Sure, I'll go hang out in New Orleans for a few weeks.
Yeah, get in some trouble.
Donuts, whiskey.
More whiskey. All right, so... now that we got... you happy with this? You happy with Aquaman? Anything else you want to cover? Do you think it's going to be good?
I'm trying not to be too judgy. If I just stay away from everything on it, I feel like this franchise has gotten so much hate. Wonder Woman is obviously their most solid movie, and for good reason, but I didn't hate most of the Superman standalone movies with Henry Cavill. I'm just trying not to judge it too harshly beforehand.
James Wan's never made a bad movie.
And you've made that point to me recently, and I have taken that under advisement, and I'm really hoping that it's going to be fun. I mean, he really has made some good movies that I've loved. I don't love horror movies, and he's made some that I actually like.
Dolph Lundgren's in it.
Well, there you go. Sweden's favorite actor.
Also, All right, side note. We were just on vacation, and we came across some Swedes while we were in Italy, and the first thing that went to my mind was Dolph Lundgren, and they just went, ugh.
They actually referred to him as a B-movie actor.
Yeah, they didn't like Dolph.
That's a thing in Sweden.
Yeah, they just kind of scoffed at him. Broke my heart.
I just think it's hilarious that I felt like that was a very Hollywood American slang term, but the Swedes are all up on B-movies and that's where Dolph Lundgren lives in their hearts.
Yeah. But I think Aquaman is going to be helped by James Wan and the very low expectations. When people go into this and it's actually good, everyone's going to be they're going to like it a lot more. There's no expectations on it. It's like a punching bag right now. And then when people go, hey, this is a good movie, they're going to like it.
I mean, I hope so. I really do. I want it to do well. I think it's about time for the franchise as a whole to have an about face on critical acceptance.
Do you think it'll be better than Brazen, Jason Momoa's Alaskan action adventure on Amazon Prime right now?
If it's not better than Brazen, then we're all in trouble.
Yeah, good point. All right, you want to get to the movie?
Let's do it.
Free Fire. So this may sound like a random movie to talk about. Not many people have watched it. It was directed by Ben Wheatley, written by Ben Wheatley and his wife Amy Jump. It was produced by Martin Scorsese, and it's basically just two groups of people shooting at each other in a warehouse for an hour. 20 minutes of setup and then 60 minutes of gunfight. And it's not really like any gunfight movie you ever watch. It was very typical of a Ben Wheatley film. So I love Ben Wheatley. I've been watching him ever since 2010's Down Terrace. And then he did Kill List, which is one of my favorite horror movies of this century, I think. Then Sightseers, which I made you watch, about two insane caravanners murdering people violently.
I don't want to talk about that one.
And then A Field in England, which is brilliant. It's just a head trip of a movie. Then he made High Rise with Tom Hiddleston. Very good film. This guy makes movies that just they don't go where you expect them to. And I think this movie, Free Fire, it kind of got some flack. People said it was a Tarantino-type ripoff, but I don't buy that. I think it's its own beast, and I just think that was lazy criticism by a lot of the critics who wrote those reviews.
I gotta say, when you first told me about this movie, I think you saw it one more time than I have,
yeah,
right?
I saw it in the theaters.
So you told me it was by Ben Wheatley, and the only other movie I've seen of his is Sightseers, which is, if you haven't seen a Ben Wheatley movie, probably not the best one to get into his stuff with. It's a little bit too weird for me. But I was very pleasantly surprised at how fun this is. I would liken it more to, there's definitely a lot of really dark humor in it. I think it's closer to the humor in The Guard.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like a McDonough movie. It also has some weird, it feels, yeah, I would say so. And a lot of people compare, the dialogue, though, isn't overly stylized. Like, the characters aren't overly cool. And when you think of a Tarantino movie, it's cool people saying cool dialogue. The people in this movie are not, it's not like that. I just think it was lazy. I don't want to hark on this forever, but the more reviews I read, the more annoyed I got at them just comparing this to a Tarantino joint. Because Tarantino ripped off Sergio Leone. I mean, he has shot for shot in some scenes. So if you talk about one of his movies, you got to talk about the movies that influenced him and the movies he ripped off. So I don't know why they're doing that with this movie.
Yeah, there's a really good Cracked podcast from when Jack was still on the staff, and he talks about how nothing is truly new anymore because it's all based on something else. So I really feel like it's unfair to make all these comparisons to Tarantino because everything has been inspired by or come from something else. I've told you this many times, but my feelings about the sci-fi industry is that they've all been inspired by something. They're borrowing pieces of other things. So it's unfair to call everything, unless it's a direct line-for-line ripoff. It's just, it is lazy writing, and I got more and more annoyed with all these reviews, and I started to try and seek out the more positive, or you shared with me a few interviews that were really good.
Yeah, there's a really good interview with Scorsese and Ben Wheatley that you should check out. I forget where it's at, but
Rolling Stone,
yeah, really good interview. And also, Ben Wheatley got the idea for this movie because of a gunfight in LA, Miami. So the feds and some robbers got into a massive gunfight, but it lasted forever. And there were so many missed bullets, but when there's a gunfight with the feds, they have to track every single bullet that was shot. So when you see the logistics, the ballistic report of this gunfight, it was just bullets everywhere, and the majority of them missed. So he was like, I want to do this movie in a warehouse where a bunch of idiots, some idiots and some other non-idiots, shoot at each other, and it's just ugly.
But then he kept it on the shelf for, what, 10, 15 years? Just didn't know what to do with it. And he heard something about the IRA buying guns in America and then bringing them back over to deal with the troubles in Ireland. And that's when it all started to come together.
And Cillian Murphy was a huge fan of who's the star of this movie. One of the stars loved Kill List. So he approached Ben Wheatley and said, let's work together. So Ben Wheatley pitches to him. And they brought in the craziest cast. You have Charlton Copley from District 9, Babu Cisse, Jack Rayner, who was amazing in Sing Street, Armie Hammer, Noah Taylor, Cillian Murphy, Brie Larson, Oscar winner Brie Larson, Michael Smiley, who's in pretty much all of his movies, great actor, he's also in The Lobster. Then you have Sam Riley, who...
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah.
Classic. It's definitely one I've seen too many times, as you know, but the great thing about watching Sam Riley in this movie is he is so against his... I haven't seen much of his other work, you might have seen more, but he's so against what you think of him as, is just this more stoic, quiet Brit. And he's just this drugged out Boston weirdo who just keeps messing up in this movie. And it's hilarious to see him act this way. And in the commentary, everybody was so entertained by his antics.
He's kind of like a cockroach in this movie. He's sitting there smoking crack, getting shot, blowing up propane tanks.
Until a certain point.
But yeah. Yeah, spoilers for this. Spoilers for this. If you haven't seen Free Fire, stop this now. Go watch on Amazon Prime. Come back and listen to this. But I think he's probably my favorite character in this because he's a total dirtbag, but he has the best lines. Like, he got beat up the night before, and he's asking a guy for some Advil, and the guy's like, I have smack. And what did he say?
Talk about using a sledgehammer to crack a nut, and then he just takes it.
Yeah, and then he does smack.
Later, during the gunfight at one point, isn't he doing some crack or meth in the corner?
Yeah, and then he passes out, which probably keeps him alive longer. And then also, as they're walking through this warehouse for the gun deal, he's just like, this place is dirty. And he improv'd all that. He's like, look at all this crap. Like, he's just a weird cockroach little guy. But I guess we should break down the characters. Actually, I just want to say real quick that Ben Wheatley designed the entire set of this movie while on Minecraft. So instead of using crazy architectural design or workshop, he just built it on Minecraft. And then all the set designers built it.
Yeah, he said something to the effect, I think it was one of the interview articles, either Rolling Stone or Den of Geek, but he did the vague outlines, and then somebody else on the staff's son took a whole day to fill in the walls.
Yeah, he just paid a young kid to do it. And I also love that he had an edit suite on set. Armie Hammer talked about that on Happy Sad Confused, which was pretty great. So he's editing on set. They shot it over 30 days, and he just wanted to make like an anti-gunfight. Kind of avoid the kind of Hong Kong gung fu, everything like that. And also, a really funny thing is, since this is just a total gunfight movie, he said they want to make two remakes with Scorsese. He wanted to make one with muskets and one with laser guns.
Yes, muskets in Boston, very Civil War era, or even Revolution.
It would just be people bayoneting each other.
I'm trying to picture it.
All right,
very bloody and muddy.
All right, so let's set up the two different teams here. So we're introduced, the first characters we meet are Steve-O and Bernie. Couple idiots are driving in a Winnebago. They're driving to this place. They meet up with Michael Smiley, Frank, Brie Larson, Justine, and Killian Murphy's Chris. Chris and Frank are two IRA guys who have come to America, and they're working with Brie Larson's Justine character. She's brokering the deal to get some AR-17s and bring them back to Northern Ireland. Eventually, Ord, played by Armie Hammer, shows up. He immediately hates Frank, which is one of my favorite parts of this movie, is the Frank-Ord frenemy relationship. They go inside, and they meet Charlton Copley's Vernon Lern, and Babu Cisse's Martin. Then, in the back, their kind of muscle are Harry, played by Jack Rayner, and then Gordon, played by Noah Taylor. So, it's basically 5-on-5, the two teams. And so, they get together, they meet. And Vern already tries to screw them over by giving them the wrong guns.
On purpose.
Killian Murphy's like, whatever, we need to go back with guns. There's that line with him and Frank, hey, we need these. So they take the guns, they show that they work.
But he's got the bullets in the van, doesn't give them to them. He just brought them in case they had a problem with the deal, and then he'd throw it in.
Yeah, and then he's like, yeah, we'll just give them to Libyans. Or something like that. He's a shitty little shit.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, he's a rare gem, that Vern.
Oh, he's a rare gem. In this movie, he calls himself a rare gem. He's a treat in this movie. Ben Wheatley just said, turn your South African accent up to 12, and that's how we're going to play it, and he's just brilliantly unhinged. So the deal goes through, then Harry and Gordon drive up to collect the drop off the guns, but a problem the night before happened when Harry, played by Jack Rayner, and Steve-O the idiot, actually Steve-O is Frank's brother-in-law. We're getting into
Frank's sister's husband.
Yeah, brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they show up. But the problem is that Steve-O bottled, hit Harry's
cousin
in the face with a bottle the night before at a club. Then Harry beat him up. So the two start fighting. And of course, since it's a bunch of men who can't back down, a gunfight breaks out.
This movie is basically Murphy's Law, right? If anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. And you've got your masterminds of the deal that you've, the more business or strategic minded people. And then you've got your morons in the background who sort of cause all the chaos.
Yeah, I mean, it basically just comes down to three idiots, right?
Yeah, I mean, Steve-O, I love the way that Martin and Ben talk about it in one of their interviews. Just, they're the morons who shouldn't be there. Why are they even there? And they're the ones that cause every problem.
Yeah, and then Harry, who's played by Jack Rayner, he's on Charlton Copley's side. He pulls a gun and shoots Steve-O, and then everything just goes off.
Then it's just pure chaos for the next hour, and it just goes bonkers. I think it's really creative. I like the dust and the dirt flying, the at some point, everyone's gotten shot in the leg or the torso. So now they've got to crawl around. They can't even walk, which is, it's a great handicap because you can then hamper their movement, but it's still interesting. They can't be fast anymore, so they have to work around it. There's these epic scenes where no less than, what, three or four characters climb up a staircase crawling.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is not an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. These are people who got shot in the leg, and each bullet counts. Like, bullets hurt. And so when they get hit, they're just kind of laying around walking, or laying on the ground, crawling around. Also, we forgot to kind of introduce some of the characters. Do you want to tell them about Charlton Copley and Vernon and what he was misdiagnosed with?
Yeah. When we're introduced to Vernon and Martin, they show up together. That's Justine's partner. Vernon's description is that he was misdiagnosed as a child genius and never got over it. Chris, who is Killian Murphy, asks, well, what is he now? And Justine's reply is, an international asshole. Martin is described as, he tried to be a panther, but it didn't work out.
I don't even know what that means, but it's just funny. So you have all these guys, gunfight breaks out. Let's see, who gets shot first? So Steve-O gets shot first, and then good old Martin gets shot in the head. You see his brain, but he's not dead. He just kind of got his skull grazed.
I don't really know what's going on with him medically, but he does pop back up some, maybe 20 minutes later, and it's great because Ord makes this weird statement, poke him in the eye, see if he flinches.
Yeah. And you know what I loved about the score? When Harry was just about to shoot Steve-O, the score kicked in and started going boom, boom. Like real subtly started turning up, and then Harry shot Steve-O. So it kind of like guides you into it with the score.
Yeah, you did point that out the last time we watched it. I'd have to go back again and really pay attention to when the music, is there any in the beginning? You know, I'd really like to pay attention to that because they did talk about it in their interviews, and I feel like it's a piece I've missed out on.
And I love how the drama builds. You have a scene where Noah's loading guns and you hear, ah, and everyone's like, what is it? What is it? He's like, I got a splinter. And then later on, the guy's under the car looking like really bad, and it's just his allergies.
Yeah, there's definitely some fun sight gags in here, some really dark jokes. Justine kicks it all off when she's in the back of the car. Killian asks her if she's FBI, and she says, I'm IIFM, in it for myself.
Yeah, that was a good line. I like that. And then, so the gunfight starts off, and everyone kind of takes her side. Vern takes a shot. Charlton Copley takes a shot in the shoulder. And he's like, I'm dying, but it was mostly shoulder pad.
Yeah, you're going to be okay. It's mostly the suit. It looks like the shoulder pad.
Who's your favorite character in this movie?
That's a great question. I was thinking that it was Sam Riley, but I don't know. The more I think about Vern's lines, he's just so hilarious and over the top. You got to love the dramatics around him getting hit in his suit. And it's just the shoulder pad. He thinks it's a tragedy. One of the very first lines he says is, someone's trying to talk him down from the ledge, you know, let's not do this, let's not take this and get crazy and have a big shootout. And he says, it's too late, I've been insulted.
Yeah, I mean, and then at the end when Justine's just like, men. But he's just, and then, he, like, I don't know, what I liked about him was, he's just such a dirtbag, but you like him. Like, Ben Wheatley perfectly, like he said in this movie, he just tried, he didn't want to have total stereotypes of the jerk, the whatever, the whatever, the whatever. He's like, he wanted to add layers to these people. And there really is no backstory. But you also sort of like the majority of these people in this movie.
Yeah, there's definitely some of them I want more to die than others. But I went through a point where I liked all of them for some period of time. Well, Vern was definitely a pleasure. And then Steve-O and his antics with the drugs and the nonstop. But who was your favorite character?
I don't know. Since we just watched it again today, I just gotta be Steve-O. He's just such an idiot. But I love him. He, like, blows up all these canisters. He's the whole reason for this whole entire thing. Total dirtbag. I mean, Frank is probably the most likable guy played by Michael Smiley. He's the one that you probably want to live the most. But just, I don't know, Steve-O, he just passes out. He finds a lot of humor in things. He ends up getting his head completely squished. Ugh. He kills Harry by shooting him in the ass.
Well, he shoots him in the ass and the head accidentally under the trunk or under the van.
Yeah, and there's a scene where they're trying to talk some snipers or somebody into teaming up with Charlton Copley and his crew, and Steve-O's like, don't listen to them, they're not your boss. He's just such a little shit. And I love him and Harry yelling at each other the whole time. They just hated each other, and then they killed each other.
The most delightful thing about Steve-O was just that Sam Riley is so not what I was expecting, and that made it a lot of fun for me. Charles O. Copley, we know from his other movies that he can be over the top and a lot of fun and really witty, but it was just really funny watching Sam Riley be this total wacko.
Yeah, and what in the commentary, Cillian Murphy was like, I didn't even know he could do this. They were laughing at it.
Oh, yeah. They were all just thrilled with his performance in the commentary. And that was a lot of fun to hear, too. It was just a bunch of guys who clearly loved making their movie. They all were really excited about the weapons that they get to choose and use throughout the movie.
Yeah, didn't they get to pick their own? But then Ben Wheatley said he had a lot of problems with continuity in this movie because he had to know who was shooting where and at what.
Yeah, and they had to do perfect little impact blasts on the columns and stuff with little puffs of dust. I can't imagine. That is a perfectionist's nightmare.
That's like one of those ideas that you think is fun, but then you realize you got to shoot several thousand rounds of bullets and just turn into a nightmare. But I guess the way they did fun, I mean, these people don't move. I mean, so for them to get shot and just lay around is a good narrative trick because you know where the people are at.
Yeah, and I think at a certain point, if you get into just the movie itself, you're not concentrating on something like that. You're listening to the lines and the funny faces the characters are making or what it is they're up to, because they're all in the same room almost the whole time, or they're in the same building because there's a point when they go upstairs into an office, some of them. But the rest of them are all in this massive warehouse, so there's constantly maybe somebody in the background doing something funny or saying something, and you can overhear little snippets of comments in the background of a scene, even though it's not the focus. So for me, that's the fun part of this, not looking at where that bullet went wrong.
Yeah, and then things really get interesting when two random snipers show up and start shooting at all the guys.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and you don't hear about it until then. It is funny that Ord actually knows one of them and thinks he's retired, which gives me flashbacks to John Wick.
Yeah, so one of these snipers, he gets brought, he's a, two freelance snipers get in by, brought in by Martin, who got shot in the head, and Brie Larson. And they, of course, fail and get killed. But one of the guys is like, I hate freelance jobs. And the only reason he's back into it is because he has 11 kids and some Asian woman cleaned him out.
So here's the thing, and I don't think we've really discussed this at all, but what was the goal there? Were Brie and Martin going to con everybody else out of the deal, have the snipers take out all of them, and then just make off with the money and the guns?
I think so, but Ben Wheatley said it was a terrible plan.
Oh, it was all, everything was horribly planned, and they've got this geriatric sniper, and obviously he fails at his mission, and Ord's shooting at the guy.
Yeah, well, Ord and Cillian Murphy took him out. I was impressed by that. Cillian actually, like, do you think Cillian and Frank are high IRA guys? Because they said, we bet we can't fail.
I mean, they came over to America. That can't be cheap at the time, especially if there's suspicion about what you're up to. How are they going to get the guns back, too?
Boat.
Okay. I can see that.
Steve-O will drive it.
He'll drive the boat.
I want that movie. Steve-O going to Northern Ireland.
High on crack.
It's a good movie. No, but I don't know. So these snipers come in. They get killed. Turns out that they were brought in for a freelance job, which I think is pretty funny. And so they get killed. And then it just kind of comes down to the group starts squaring off. So you have Frank and Charlton Copley Vernon start brawling. And then you have Steve-O and Harry. And then Cillian Murphy is kind of on his own. And then Justine starts battling Gordon. But I think my favorite battle of this whole thing is between Frank and Vernon. The two of them fighting, because it gets insane. They both crawl upstairs. Actually, Frank has a syringe in his hand, which is horrible. Charlton Copley has his cardboard armor, which he puts on because he doesn't want to get needles in his arm.
Protection from infection.
Yeah, because that's what will kill you. But he has 90 minutes because Ord says you have a golden 90 minutes. They go upstairs. They get in this crazy shootout, and Frank lights Vernon on fire, and he thinks he kills him, but then Vernon kills Frank, but then Cillian Murphy comes up and kills Vernon. Man, this movie's bloody. I don't want any of these people dying. I've watched this movie 6 times. I don't want people to die when I watch this movie.
I mean, there's definitely somebody I want to die. My least favorite person is Harry. He's just annoying the whole time.
You hated Harry? I love Harry.
I can't stand Harry.
He's funny.
He's okay. as far as lines go, but I don't like his character.
There's a scene where Ord is like, give me some bullets. And then Harry kind of does the money thing. Or Vernon's like, give me bullets. And he's like, give me some cash. And then actually, this very large Northern Irish man comes into the place. And you think he's going to be the salvation for Cillian Murphy. And Harry kills him with a crowbar to the mouth.
Yeah, that's gross. I was very sad about that because I just wanted Harry to die at that point.
Really?
I don't like Harry. He's just a pain in the butt. You're with a bunch of criminals and you're being all sanctimonious about your cousin who got bottled. Why was she hanging out at the same type of joint that Steve-O's at? It can't be a good place.
Yeah. I mean, Harry is equally responsible.
Your cousin needs to question her life decisions at this point because Steve-O...
Yeah, but it's not her fault she got bottled.
It's not her fault, but she probably shouldn't go to the same type of establishment as Steve-O.
Yeah, Steve-O's a shady fella.
Or hang out with her cousin, who's clearly a criminal.
But I guess Harry did shoot the people first. And then he actually did shoot Ord and shot Justine by accident.
Yeah, he definitely flies off the handle a bit too much for me. But I do love when Ord is trying to take down Harry and he throws the crowbar at Harry holding a gun and it hits his fingers and he's waving his little hands in the air.
Yeah, that's what Ben Wheatley said. He wanted, like, the little things to hurt. Like, you wanted little things to notice. And there's also a scene where Ord is about to attack Cillian Murphy, but Ord actually shoots... Harry shoots Ord in the calf. He's like, I shot Ord. He's gonna kill me.
That's probably one of the best lines.
Yeah, I mean, but he delivers everything really great in this movie. Like, he's funny. And Harry, like, his line delivery, Jack Rayner.
Yeah. He's funny.
Am I selling you on Harry?
No.
All right.
I still want him to die. If I had to pick somebody in the entire cast, I'm not going to count the two snipers because they're not really characters. It's definitely Harry.
Definitely Harry. I mean, I never was sold. I mean, I don't know. I guess Bernie or Gordon, because they were never fleshed out, the two of them.
Yeah.
They were kind of bullet fodder.
Yeah, I mean, of our main characters, Harry's got to go for me.
Oh, man.
It is definitely a triumphant moment when he accidentally causes his own death because he's so hell-bent on running over Steve-O's head on the floor, and he does it, and then Steve-O's gun shoots off, and Harry gets shot through the butt and the head.
So there's a scene, in the making of documentary, when Harry runs over Steve-O's head and explodes, that was a practical effect. That car tire really ran over someone's head.
A watermelon?
Yeah, and no, Ben Wheatley tested it. You don't remember that?
Yeah.
He sat in front of the car tire and they rigged it. It was really low and they had it specially rigged. So the car tire just went right over Ben Wheatley's face because he said he wouldn't do anything to his cast unless he went through it first, which is pretty crazy for a director. I mean, I guess everyone hates James Cameron, but he's the first one to go to the bottom of the ocean and risk his life. I mean, Ben Wheatley's not doing that.
To the heart of the ocean, if you will.
Yeah, but I loved how Ben Wheatley kind of set that up. So yeah. I mean, Steve-O gets his head run over and he accidentally shoots Harry in the ass. Does it go through, like, up?
How do you mean?
The bullet.
I think it does. I think it goes up through and into the ceiling.
It goes through his entire body?
Maybe there were two bullets. I don't remember. I wasn't counting bullets at that point. But I do love the point that they make in some of the interviews that the audience wasn't as affected by all the gunshots and the gunshot wounds. They were more upset by sticking your hand on a syringe that is probably dirty and who knows what's in it. Getting hit in the fingers by a crowbar because, ow, I've definitely slammed my hand in the car door a few times and it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's head being squished because, I don't know, I've had my foot or hand run over before and I can't imagine your head getting...
Yeah, that thing exploded. And Martin Scorsese said he showed this movie to a bunch of his friends and they all just went, are you really keeping that syringe in? He's like, of course. Like, that freaked people out.
I love that the reaction was, if that guy survives, is he going to have hepatitis?
Yeah. And they're not worried about all people getting murdered. Like, we've really become desensitized towards violence, have we?
Probably. All but right, so, isn't that the point of this movie?
Yeah, you're right. So how about this? Let's take a break. Let's kind of think about why we're so desensitized to violence. And we'll be back. And we're back to movies, films, and flicks. Want to answer a listener question before we talk more about this movie?
Let's do it.
All right. So the question is, what is your favorite gunfight? Now, this question was asked not to us, but it was asked to Ben Wheatley and Martin Scorsese in the Rolling Stone interview.
Close enough.
Yeah. And Ben Wheatley said Wild Bunch. So what's your favorite gunfight? No, this isn't what's the best gunfight. This is what is your favorite gunfight?
Yeah. What do I like? What do we like the most?
Actually, before we get into it, I like what Scorsese had to say about Wild Bunch, where he loves it, but he's like, I just can't watch it anymore. It's just so brutal. Have you seen Wild Bunch?
I don't think so.
It's horrible. But it's amazing. Horrible. It's really bleak, and the people are terrible, and they murder the shit out of each other.
I feel like this is our argument back and forth about Thirst.
No, I mean, oh,
I say
Thirst.
It's horrible, you say it's bleak and amazing.
Well, I mean, Wild Bunch is bleak and amazing, it's just, you can't watch it much. It's not healthy. So I think that's what Scorsese was getting at. So what gunfights you got?
All right, so I've got two. I'm going to cheat. I've got one for television, technically, and one for movies. Is that okay?
That's fine.
All right, so for movies, I went back and forth on this because I feel like it's really cheesy. And I just really liked, when I think about how they were going for it in this movie, I really liked the stinking kitchen fight on Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They just wrecked the entire house. No regard for, do the neighbors hear this? They're shooting glasses and pictures, and they've destroyed that house. And then at the end, before the very final battle, when they're fighting in the home design store, or it almost looks like Costco from the outside, when they're just using everything as a prop. They've got the kitchen knives and all that stuff and guns, and they're shooting at mannequins. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. And what's your other one?
My favorite one for television, this was actually my first pick because I really, really loved it, but we watched Godless on Netflix. It's maybe 8 or 10 part series starring Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey. Premise is, it's a town full in the Old West, full of all women because there was a mine in the town and all of the men were in there one day when there was a mine shaft collapse. So now all that's populating this town are the women and children. And some trouble has been brought to the town, not to go into all the detail, but there's a final battle when an outlaw who is looking for one of his men comes to the town to wreck them all. And it's just all these women and children. And there's a certain point when you think that the Buffalo soldiers outside of the town are going to save them. But no, the bad guy has already thought of that and taken them down. So it's just a cool battle. It's these single women holed up in a hotel, getting wrecked, shooting through bricks and sofas, and it's just a neat battle.
And horses are running up to the second floor and dragging women out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you think, yeah, it's one of those movies where
the roof.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where you think the cavalry's coming, but they just don't. It's just two people.
I mean, not until the very, very last do they get, what is it, two people to help? There's an Indian, a Native American, and the main guy or the love interest.
Jack O'Connell.
Who is from the bad guys gang originally. It's a cool battle. Just all of these. And maybe that's why it resonates with me. I love the strong women thing. Just defending their town and wrecking this group of outlaws.
Yeah, that's a very. I mean, if you don't even want to watch a series, just watch the final episode. You'll see a great gunfight. All right. So I guess for me, you know, you have the classic westerns. Then you have Heat. You have, you know, The Untouchables, High Noon, True Romance, anything from Tarantino. But I got to go with Hot Shots Part 2 and then Hot Fuzz. I know they're comedies. I know they make fun of everything. But maybe I just like the spoofs of this. Maybe I like in Hot Shots Part 2. He has the deadliest gunfight ever. And then there's a kill count as he's murdering people on playgrounds.
I love the kill count.
And then he just throws bullets at people and kills them.
Gotta love Charlie Sheen and her and his love interest Moving Mole. You know what the funny thing is? When I thought of this question and I wanted to bring it up to you, I was like, Mark's gonna say Hot Shots. And then I just didn't say a thing, and that's exactly.
Like, there's a scene where they're shooting somebody and one of the guys goes, you know, cream of onion. Like, I've always quoted that. And then also Hot Fuzz, just because, you know, you have the beginning where he's asking Nicholas Angel about, you know, have you ever shot guns while jumping? Have you ever shot a gun in the air? And then the final gunfight, that all happens. And it's just a lot of fun. I don't know. Maybe I just like movies that reference other gunfights. I mean, I know there's great The Matrix and everything, but the first movie that came in my mind was Hot Shots Part 2.
What about Blazing Saddles?
Which gunfight is that?
I don't know.
I mean, there's a big pie. There's a big fight at the end. There's a food fight.
Exactly.
There's not really a gunfight.
When they break into the set of the musical.
I mean, Gene Wilder was shot in the butt by a kid, but you don't see it. He just tells a story. And then the other guy puts a gun to himself. I don't want to quote that dialogue.
Okay.
All right. So, let's get back to this movie. All right. So, what's your favorite moment?
Ooh, my favorite moment. That's tough. I don't know. I think for me, again, it's just the really tiny moments, just the funny lines that you hear each time you watch it. Just enjoyed their banter a lot. I don't know if I had a favorite moment. I hate when Michael Smiley gets killed. That's my least favorite moment.
Well, he just gets shot in the back.
I know, and you thought he had succeeded. He's got the phone, and it's not good.
And Vernon Lawrence shoots him.
Ugh, Vern.
I don't know. So, all right. So, if I had to pick a favorite moment in this movie, man, oh gosh, you know what it is? I think it's at the end where Cillian Murphy is laying dying. It turns out that Justine Brie Larson survived, and she kills him, and she shoots Armie Hammer in the head. And at the end, she's like, "Hey, you want to take a rain check on our date?" She was playing him the other time, but Cillian Murphy goes, "Hey, take what you want, girl." But the way he says it, I try to say it all the time, and I sound nowhere near as cool. Do you think it's just Irish accent?
I think it's the Irish accent.
He sounded awesome. He's dying.
I mean, he's Cillian Murphy. He always sounds awesome.
He's dying. He has a bullet at him, and he still sounds smoother than I do.
He's nearly a deserter in Dunkirk, and he still sounds cool the whole time.
He killed a guy in that, too.
I know, and it breaks your heart. You feel bad for him.
Yeah, and then I also like the scene where Martin comes back to life. Well, Martin got shot in the head, then he comes back up with his gun. He's going crazy. Turns out that he set up all the snipers and everything like that, and he points a gun at Cillian Murphy, and Cillian Murphy's allowed to be cheeky a little bit. He's like, hey, man. Like, I'm not part of this.
And he puts his hands up in the air.
And he does a cheeky thing. You never, when has Cillian Murphy ever been cheeky?
Oof, I'd have to comb IMDb to figure that one out. I don't know.
I mean, he was kind of cheeky at the end of Dark Knight Rises.
That's true, but he's insane.
But do you think he got the humor, though?
I don't know. You've watched a lot of Peaky Blinders. Is he ever cheeky on
No.
there? No.
Dude is like,
Just stone cold.
But you know what I like about him in Peaky Blinders is he's very... I believe every fight that he's in that he wins, I believe it. And I don't get that much.
It's that quiet menace.
He's good. I think he's... I'd love to see him as James Bond. It wouldn't happen.
Oh.
You know what movie I just watched that had a very believable badass was... It's called You Were Never Really Here with Joaquin Phoenix, directed by the lady who did American Psycho. And she also directed We Needed to Talk About Kevin. I think that's the name. But he bulked up. And he just brutalizes people with hammers and chokes them. But I bought every second of his physicality.
Joaquin?
Yeah. Ugh. It's gross. It's a great movie, but it's bleak as shit. It's like, I couldn't recommend it to somebody. They would hate me afterwards.
Yeah, I don't...
But I could see Cillian doing that movie.
Oh, I could definitely buy him as quiet and just stoic and scary. He was believable in that... What's the one with Rachel McAdams? Red Eye?
Yeah, he was good in Red Eye.
He's scary in that movie. It's not a great movie, but he's scary.
He catches a pen in the neck.
He's legitimately creepy and scary.
Yeah.
If I really had to pick a moment that was my favorite, it would probably be the introductions. Because it's just funny.
Oh, the misdiagnosed child genius?
Yeah, and Justine's banter back and forth with Chris. He's asking out to dinner at the time. There's just a lot of funny comments flying all at once before the craziness happens. He's trying to test out the guns. Vern's all offended by everything pretty much happening in this entire scene, so it's very cheeky.
So, what are a couple lines from this that you would just pat yourself on the back if you knew you wrote? I know we've kind of covered a lot of this ground, but what's like one line of dialogue in this movie? If you wrote it, you would just pat yourself on the back.
I've got one. So when Vern gets hit, I think maybe by some shrapnel at first, Justine asks him, "Does it hurt?" And he says, "No, I'm from Africa. Africa's not for sissies." And that just cracked me up. It's just so ridiculous.
And he says it so fast.
Yes, and he says it. He's very fast talker in his accent. It really sells it for me.
I just love talking about using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. I don't know why I like that line so much, but just hearing a smackhead say it. Like, it's the context of when he does it.
It's a very coherent thought, too, for someone who's been beaten up and is really hopped up on drugs.
All right, so I'm just dropping this on you right now, but you make this movie, right? You have the same two sides. Who walks out?
Oh, who walks out? Cillian and Michael Smiley.
Just the two of them?
Yep, that's it.
I mean, wasn't there a review that said the IRA guys are the good, like, become the heroes of the movie?
Yeah, they said in this movie, they're about as close as we get to heroes.
So how do they get out, Megan? How do you see this movie playing?
Some of them could just bleed out from their wounds. Well, they could. I mean, yeah. People have been hit a lot in this movie. Maybe Vern dies from his burns and gunshot before he can shoot Michael Smiley, or he's run out of bullets. That would be plausible, too. So that he gets to go back down there. I mean, I could take it or leave it with Ord being alive. I don't think he cares to kill the Irish.
Yeah, well, he didn't want to.
No, because at the very end, he was going to go get a drink. with Chris or Killian. He says, we got 15 minutes before the fuzz shows up. And Chris says, what do you want to do? Let's get a beer.
Yeah. And the backstory for Ord, he was in, he was kind of in Vietnam, they said. And he kind of saw a lot of stuff. Because when the combat starts, he's really calm. It's not until he starts smoking some weed that he gets really disenfranchised from the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think he would have walked out of there. I mean, but Ben Wheatley said he had Justine live at the end because he wanted her to be, like, the final girl. And he thought it'd be weird if the one woman surrounded by men gets murdered by one of them.
I mean, she made decisions to do this deal.
What if one of the snipers she paid shot her by accident?
Fair. Totally fair. So who do you think would come out?
Why do we... Yeah, I want Michael Smiley. And mm-hmm. Why do we like them?
They were very chill. I mean, not to sound pretentious, but we have been to Derry and seen some of the after effects of the Troubles. And it's a very upsetting thing. I think we sympathize with it a bit.
Do you think Michael Smiley's just a good actor?
Oh, I think he's an excellent actor.
Did you like him in The Lobster?
I
feel like you blocked that movie out of your memory. Because we were talking about it the other day, and you had a complete different idea of what the plot was.
I'm trying to forget that I watched The Lobster.
I love that movie.
It's very depressing. It's right up there with Ingrid Goes West. I can't do that again.
Whenever I see Smiley, though, in movies, it just makes me happy. Because I remember liking him in Kill List. I liked him in Field in England. So the more roles that he gets, the bigger roles, it makes me really happy.
Is he the one who had to put his hands in the toaster?
Which one's that?
In The Lobster. Because remember when they got punished, they had to put their hands in toasters?
No, because he was one of...
Oh, he's the other guy.
Yeah, he was in Rachel Weisz's crew.
Oh, okay.
It was probably John C. Reilly or something.
Oh, yeah, that was who it was.
Yeah, toaster was a weapon in The Lobster.
So weird.
Could a toaster have been in this movie? Maybe thrown.
Doesn't Rachel Weisz sell her eyes?
Yeah.
So weird.
And then he leaves her there at the end. Oh, and also there's a scene where Ord hits Harry in the head with a rock. No, it hits Steve on the head with a rock.
He nails him with it.
I got to update my best throwing of a rock scene. I had my Monty Python, Life of Brian. But this one's up there. Ord whacked him right in the head with a rock, Steve-O.
We didn't really cover this part, but when the two guys, when Harry and Steve-O see each other, because you've brought in the people to move the guns, and then the van that the guns are going in or coming out of, and they notice each other, and they sort of start this scuffle, and the two parties are trying to keep them apart. There is some really funny dialogue there. You've got Killian going over to Steve-O and starting to beat the crap out of him. Harry thinks that's just not enough. What did he say? He's like, you might as well tickle him to death.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's not happy that he's only getting punched in the face over and over. And then the solution that Killian comes up with is he's going to pay for her hospital treatment. And he's going to write her a really nice letter of apology, which it seems so stupid. But if you think about it in the, I guess, what is this?
Well, there's no other way.
What time period?
He couldn't have emailed her.
60s, 70s. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like a letter was probably appropriate for back then. But Ord makes this stupid snide remark and he says, maybe she can't read and she wants a drawing.
And then Harry's like, she can read.
That's some pretty hilarious dialogue.
Yeah, no, I mean... Armie Hammer can really deliver these things.
And he's so pleased with himself when he says it, too. He just kind of chuckles in the background.
And I love how the tickling comes back at the end when Ord jumps on top of Harry and starts tickling him.
Yeah. That was a good callback.
I feel like he was about 3 feet high. Like, I feel like Armie Hammer is about 3 feet taller than Jack Rayner was.
Oh, yeah, by far. I mean, Jack Rayner's, I mean, he's like a stout little guy. He's not unfit, but he's definitely not. I looked it up. Armie Hammer is 6'5".
Yeah, he kind of towers all of it. And Ben Wheatley said he was expecting Armie Hammer to show up on set and just kind of be like a pretty boy. But then he hated him more because he said he was really cool.
Oh, his Happy Sad Confused that we listened to, his interview. It was a lot of fun. I mean, he seems like a genuine guy.
I like that he talks about filming processes.
And how disheartening the auditioning process is and how that can really mess with you.
All right, and going back to the movie... I do like the scene. I know we're flopping all over the place on this film, but I love the scene where Armie Hammer comes up to Steve-O after Steve-O had got some makeup put on him by Killian Murphy and makes fun of him for it.
Oh, yeah. Steve-O asks Justine as soon as he gets out of the van if she's got some of that stuff, the brown stuff she puts on her face, because he wants to hide the bruises. He feels like it'll make him look a little bit better. And then Killian grabs it from him and he's dabbing his face all over as... Who was it? Ord walks up?
Yeah, it's a weird scene. And also, something that's never explained in this movie is when Steve-O's driving to the deal and he's talking about Frank staying at his house. He's like, Frank took my shoes and polished them and placed them out front. He's like, who does that? What does that even mean? And later on, when Steve-O questions Frank about it, Frank has no idea what he's talking about.
So who polished Steve-O's shoes then?
Killian Murphy?
Was it his wife?
Probably not.
Yeah, they seem to hate each other.
But I just love that he thought that was like a threat, that he cleaned his shoes. And then Frank had no idea about it.
Steve-O's not very smart.
All right. So what are your final thoughts on this movie?
The lines. It comes down to the little moments and the lines for me. I think that's a lot of Amy that, according to what we heard in Ben's commentary, she wrote a bunch of that stuff. There was some improv here and there.
But Amy Jump.
Amy Jump, Ben Wheatley's wife and writing partner. Love all the lines. Love the sassy little things that they put in there. Love just pretty much everything Vern. Yes, I do want him to die at the end, but because he's messing with my favorite characters. But he's just so funny and over the top.
And we also showed this movie to your parents, and they loved it.
They did.
They just love action movies, and they loved it.
They love action movies, and they like dark comedies.
Man, this one was perfect. I'm really bummed that this movie didn't take off more, but I mean, Ben Wheatley's movies, you know, Down Terrace is just a gruel session. Kill List is one of the most brutal movies I've seen in years. Filled in England is a big 90-minute head trip. Sightseers is brutal. I mean, his movies just aren't that mainstream, but I think this is his most mainstream by far, so I'm kind of bummed it didn't get more people watching it.
And I didn't even know when it came out. You had to tell me about it, but I'm really glad that we got into it. I think you said we've jumped all over with the plot here, but that's the problem when you love something so much. You just keep remembering all the fun stuff. It also helps that we just watched it today and yesterday, but it's so fun to remember all these crazy little moments. I was just thinking in the very end with the rain, the sprinklers come on, and Killian's sitting next to a wall. It turns out this factory or this warehouse they were in, it was an umbrella factory. It's just such a random, ironic moment.
And then he finds an umbrella and opens it up and there's nothing to cover him from the rain hitting him.
Yeah, it's just the skeleton of an umbrella,
I want a movie about Ord and Killian Murphy. All right, so three movies I want from this. I want Ord and Killian Murphy drinking beers. I want Steve-O driving a ship to Northern Ireland. And then the third one is I want to know who polished the shoes.
Hey, maybe Ord and Killian, if they survive and the cops get them in time, they'll open up a pub together in Boston.
Yeah.
It would be a good business venture. They could smuggle some drugs through there.
Do what you want, girl.
Clean money.
Could be the name of the pub.
There you go. Hey, I've got a theory before we finish.
Yeah.
So that new movie coming out with the kid and the super high-tech laser guns, it's got Jack Rayner in it. Maybe that's the next incarnation of this movie.
It's them shooting at each other with those guns?
Same world. Laser guns. Everybody else is going to pop up.
Just the same character shooting each other with those guns?
Yeah, but in the future.
Oh my goodness. I want this movie. Do they get like cloaking stuff?
Yeah, they get these cool digital outfits and they're not wearing the 70s garb anymore. They've got updated insults, but Vern still has shoulder pads.
Yeah, he has to. He has to get shot at him again and we need that line. Word for word remake?
No, it wouldn't be as fun. We need some new lines to quote.
Yeah, anytime... I love that. Yeah. Watch this movie. The main point that we did this podcast was just to spread the word about Free Fire. So, I mean, if you're listening to this, you're still here, just watch the movie. It's a blast. You'll think people love it, Meg?
I think they can see how much we love it, and hopefully they'll check it out just because of that.
All right, cool. So, any plugs before we leave?
Go take a look at Sea Beast Week. It's coming up, right?
Yeah. So when this is going up tomorrow, all next week, there's going to be about 14 Sea Beast posts. So check that out. Also head to iTunes, go to Movies, Films, and Flicks, rate, review, subscribe. We'd love to know what you think. Stop to the website, go to Twitter, go to Facebook, our podcast, you know, listen to it, recommend it, share it, watch Free Fire. Let us know what you think. And, so for me, Mark, and for Megan, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Thanks.